U.S. regulators say they've cracked a big case of global oil speculation.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now, the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. Commodities regulators are suing a couple of oil investors and their Norwegian-owned trading firms. The charges from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission actually date back to 2008, when international traders allegedly pocketed $50 million. From Washington, here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
U.S. regulators say two well-known traders, one in Oklahoma and one in Australia, bought up nearly 5 million gallons of oil to create an artificial shortage in early 2008. They then bet on oil prices to fall and sold their hoard at a big profit. The two traders had been able to do this twice before investigators stopped it. It's taken 3 years to put the case together. Julian Lee at the Center for Global Energy Studies says that's because of all the complicated auditing. Still, he says the possible fines in this case of $150 million should make speculators take notice.
It's the fact that cases are brought and that shows that people are alert to and watching what's going on in the market, hopefully acts as a deterrent against using markets in ways for which they were not intended.
In the current tight oil markets, the Justice Department is investigating reports of market manipulation, but Lee thinks speculation is isolated. There aren't enough cases to drive global oil prices. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The Securities and Exchange Commission votes today on how corporate whistleblowers will be compensated for their deeds. The Dodd-Frank financial reform law created new rewards for corporate tipsters, but the law left it up to the SEC to decide exactly how to do that. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
The biggest sticking point is whether tipsters have to report suspected wrongdoing to their bosses before or as they blow the whistle. Financial Services Roundtable chief lobbyist Scott Talbot says that would give companies a chance to solve problems themselves.
That the company is in the best position to take corrective action to end the activity that's in question.
Talbot says otherwise, whistleblowers could be tempted to make false claims to earn a big bounty. They stand to get 10% to 30% of any penalty or money the SEC recovers. The whistleblower rule is designed to prevent large-scale fraud like the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. The National Whistleblowers Center says tipsters need a big financial incentive to come forward without telling their bosses. The center's executive director, Stephen Cohn, says they're afraid of losing their jobs.
If you force them to go within their company, many of them will remain silent.
The SEC may not get the last word. Its rule could be rewritten by Congress or challenged in court. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global markets are mostly mixed right now. After causing airport delays in a bunch of German cities today, the Icelandic ash cloud is slowly moving away, allowing flights to resume. The volcano itself has stopped erupting. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost another 25 points to close at 12,356.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. By Novo Nordisk, since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at NovoNordisk-US.com. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733.
Today is International Geek Pride Day, which, of course, recognizes the inner geekdom in everyone, especially those who revel in introversion, knowledge of all things smarty pants, and the fact that high school wasn't all about the parties. Alexander Robbins writes about how geeks may have been tormented as youngsters, but when they grow up, they tend to have the last laugh. Robbins wrote the book The Geeks Shall Inherit the Earth, and she's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
How does one's social skills as a student have anything to do with their abilities later on in life as an adult?
My research shows that just because you're popular doesn't guarantee any sort of success or satisfaction in adulthood. In fact, it means just the opposite. I call it the quirk theory, and what it means is that many of the differences that cause students to be excluded in school are the same traits or skills that others will admire, value, or respect about that person in adulthood and outside of the school setting.
Do we have any examples, Alexandra, of who embodies this quirk theory?
One is J.K. Rowling, who has said that she was bullied in school because she was a daydreamer who had her nose in books. Well, she has gone on to create a world of outsiders.
Harry Potter, of course.
Yes. Another one is Lady Gaga. When she was in school, students called her a freak and made fun of her eccentricity. Well, now she's one of the most powerful celebrities in the world for precisely that reason.
Is the dynamic of popularity changing, do you think, in today's social media mecca? We have Facebook and Twitter and all these different ways of kids getting in touch with one another, right?
Yes, definitely. High school today is not the high school of a generation ago. Facebook basically means that students feel like they have to be their own publicists, updating their statuses and changing their photos and monitoring everybody's public image. It's really exhausting. It's as if the cafeteria follows you around 24/7, which is why I call Facebook the online cafeteria.
Were you popular in high school? What was your social status?
I was not in the popular crowd. I was a floater. I wasn't a member of any one group. And I was also a dork and still am.
you and I have a lot in common, Alexandra. Alexandra Robbins, the author of The Geeks Shall Inherit the Earth. Alexandra, thanks.
Thanks.
And finally, a judge has set a hearing for next month to determine whether the government will have to pay for a rare Ferrari wrecked while in police custody. The sports car was stolen from a Pennsylvania dealership in 2003. The FBI recovered it a few years later in Kentucky and kept the car as part of an investigation. Well, the car was totaled while an FBI agent and assistant U.S. attorney were moving it to another garage. The car mysteriously fishtailed on a curve into some trees and bushes. The insurance company says the government owes it $750,000. The government says it's not going to pay. The men involved in the accident aren't saying anything. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Cigarette rolling shops offer cheaper smokes, but they're not technically cigarette makers, which means they don't technically pay taxes.
They make a profit off of the cigarettes that are being made, and they make a profit off the fact that the cigarettes are being manufactured in their store. To us, that meant that they were in the business of manufacturing cigarettes.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Why the DIY cigarette shop may go up in smoke. The story next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.